Welcome to another episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. I'm your host, Adam Elmakais, tuning in all the way from Los Angeles, California, for episode number 90 with my friend Matt Jara. On today's episode, we're talking about VIP at concerts, and I can sound a little bit, you know, shallow. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of depth to it, but there is. And these days, it is a very big part of the live concert experience, and I did not realize that. I've known Matt Jara for a while now. We toured together. He doesn't remember, but I originally met him when he was out with a metal band, As I Lay Dying. And then we toured together with Pierce the Veil, All Time Low. And he eventually left and toured with Shawn Mendes for a while and then converted over to working at home and now does a VIP at 237 Global. And this podcast is not an ad for that company. Although he works there, like, they're not paying me. I just genuinely wanted to know more about VIP experiences and how it worked. And I was really interested in that. And also, I thought it was so important for people who are trying to get into the industry to understand this part and also know how they can get involved in it, because it's a really good entry point for the music industry. And I think that more people should really take advantage of that because, well, we know how hard it is to get into this industry. So you can start locally, you can be an assistant, work locally for this company. And then eventually, if you do well, they might take you on tour. So reach out to Matt. Contact information is in the caption. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. As always, it's brought to you by our patrons. Thank you so much for your weekly contributions. I appreciate you dearly. We all do. And as always, I would like to welcome our newest patrons. We've got Kayla and Cassidy. Thank you so much for signing up, and your weekly contributions help make this podcast possible. And that's awesome. So thank you. All right. Like I already said, I hope you enjoy this week's episode of Don't Shit on the Bus. I will see you next week. Oh, last little bit. Stay on after the episode. I don't know if you know this. I do add a little bit at the end usually. Today we've got a special one. So check it out. And if you like it, let me know and I'll keep doing it. Hey! What's up, Matt? How's it going, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, man. I'm excited to be here digitally.
Digitally tuning in. I always say, like, tuning in all the way from Los Angeles, California. Where are you at? Somewhere rustic.
I am currently in Wilson, Wyoming, on a family vacation. That was sort of unexpected, but you know, music industry has its twists and turns, and I had some time off and took advantage of it to run up here and spend some time with my family.
Yeah, that's cool. You don't get to do. I mean, I know you're not touring as much now, so you kind of get to do these things. You get to do life.
Yeah. I mean, that's always one of the big benefits to touring is the big, you know, it's a lot of hard work while you're on the road, but then you get that time off, you know, at least a little bit, depending on what you're doing and your role in the tour. But, you know, when you're not touring, you can't just, you know, you actually have to take vacation, which is a bummer.
Go on tour again.
Yeah. And so you have to request vacation days and plan it out where, you know, if you're full-time touring, tour wraps, you just do whatever you want for a couple of weeks. You also have to look for work again.
Well, respect to you for, you know, slowing it down, having a family and arguably moving on to the next chapter of your life, but still staying in the industry, which I think is cool. I was going to say, like, I usually start by thinking like, oh, what's my favorite memory of this guest? Because I always try to go back. And I think the first time I met you was on a metal tour.
Possibly. My first memory of you is I was working for Pierce the Veil. We were prepping for a tour. And they used to have that practice room, which was more like a shed.
Oh, yeah. By their parents?
Yeah, behind the parents' house. And
more like a shed. It was a shed.
Yeah. I mean, it was essentially the size of a trailer. And they had everything in there. And they were like, oh, Adam's coming over. And I was like, I think I know Adam. And I remember you walked in. I remember it clearly. I remember you walking in and meeting you and everything. And I mean, that must have been, we had probably met prior to that.
Did we do like a photo shoot? Was I like doing photos of them in their practice space? Because I remember that then. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that had to be what, 2012, maybe? So 10 years.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it's cool. It's crazy how like sometimes when touring happens, like your first memory of somebody could be like a non-existent memory of them, which I think is what we have here, because like we were in different parts of our life on that tour and I was on a tour and everybody was somebody cool. And you're on a tour and you're like, all right, I've been doing this for a while. And, but I think you were like, I think I met you on like a bus party and now you're like a family man. And it's cool to see the spectrum of your life. Go. Yeah. I don't know. It's cool.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I hope I haven't changed too much. You know, I'd still be doing that, but now I just prefer to do it with, you know, a couple toddlers.
Yeah. You're still partying basically.
Yeah. Just a lot more work now.
I would say that like my girlfriend comes to me consistently and goes, did you see Kat's birthday party she did for their kid? And you guys like consistently have birthday parties that are cooler than anything I've ever been to.
Yeah, I will second that. My wife, Kat, does an amazing job of just sacrificing everything and like all of her time and energy to make like amazing experiences for our kids, you know, which is, you know, these crazy birthday parties or, you know, whatever she can do. Like she'll spend like half a day like setting up an art project that lasts like, you know, 20 minutes for them. But
it looks crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. She's all in.
All right. So today we're talking about VIP, which people know. I was thinking, where does VIP start? And for me, it started, well, I want to know where it started for you. Like when you were a kid, I'm imagining you went to concerts. Did you ever pay for like a VIP upgrade, or what did it look like when you were concert attendee?
You know, I wasn't even, you know, going to concerts, you know, when I was younger. I mean, I don't even think that there was like the capacity for those artists to do VIP. You know, a lot of it was like very local shows or like smaller, you know, rock and punk acts and stuff like that. I'm sure that there was VIP on Warped maybe, but I mean, that wasn't on really on my radar. The first time I think I kind of became aware of VIP stuff was bands were looking for money, you know, to kind of supplement and make sure they could continue to tour. And, you know, all of a sudden it was like, hey, we're going to be doing a meet and greet. And I was like, well, what is that? You know, and I think that was probably, you know, not that long ago.
Oh, like recently.
Well, I mean, like, you know, in the last, you know, since I've known you,
yeah.
You know, within the last 10 years, you know, as I kind of became aware that like VIP was actually a pretty cool resource for bands and for fans. But, you know, in the, I would say 10 years ago, when I became aware of it, or 5 years ago, it looked pretty different than kind of what we're doing now.
And like in the early 2000s, I feel like the only artist that really did VIP was Linkin Park, because they had like some crazy packages you could be a part of. And then other than that, my friend would sometimes get VIP upgrades, and they were just like, he had more money than me. But like for me, my VIP experience was like go to the state fair, and like Nonpoint is signing your shoes or whatever you bring to them for like 10 minutes after their set. And that was like the most meet and greet you got. But there was never like, hey, if you have more money, you could meet this band and shake their hand.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was always like the VIP experience, I guess, wasn't even like a paid VIP experience. It was just the meet and greet was them. Yeah, yeah. Or like, yeah, you could go to the radio station and try and catch your artist as they're walking in, or like hoping the band would go to the merch table after the show, you know, but that wasn't like a paid thing. For me, like growing up, paid VIP was people, like you said, like got a better parking spot and maybe a better seat. And it was done through the venue and didn't really benefit the artist.
But now it's like, okay. And so then when it started like 10 years ago, like what was it in its first iteration? Like what did it look like? And what was its intention? And just to clarify, we're not talking about, like you said, venue VIP. We're not talking about like you get a booth, you get a bar, you get a bottle. We're talking about like you come to the venue and you get a VIP experience with said artist.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I first became aware of like paid artist VIP, like you said, not through the venue, not where you're getting like access to like some branded Jack Daniels bar or whatever, but like something that's actually going to be cool, like meet the artist or, you know, the artist team or something, was in the beginning, when I became aware of it, it was very much just like, you don't even want to call it VIP, because it was really just like a photo op.
Like step and repeat kind of thing, or?
Yeah. Like you think of like, you know, and a lot of people might not know what like a step and repeat is, but you think of it as like a red carpet kind of backdrop, like a branded backdrop, or even if it is just like a curtain. But it's a step and repeat, because you do that. The artist stands there, people step in, they take a photo, and repeat. And that, and it was just like, that's really what it is. It's not necessarily a VIP experience. It's really just a photo op. Sometimes you get to high five the artist. Sometimes you get a minute. Sometimes you get a signature, but really it's almost like an assembly line.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah. And depend.
No offense.
No, not at all. I mean, that's what it is. You know, I think we should call it like we see it, like, especially in those, and there's still a lot of VIP that's like that. And it's really, you know, I feel terrible in those sort of situations, because it's up to the artist and the artist team what they want to do. And if that's how they want to run their VIP, it's really a bummer for the fans, you know, because there's just so much more they could be doing for the fans without being more taxing on the artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I think that, you know, most VIP that I was familiar with or aware of like 5-10 years ago was that step and repeat sort of, like I said, assembly line VIP photo op. And it was just kind of show up an hour before doors, sort of rush through that. And that was it.
It was kind of like a numbers game back then, right? Like you're really just, you're putting like a more expensive ticket on these people's like, I feel like as I talk about it, I'm kind of talking down on it. And I don't really mean to, because I think it, if the fan likes it and the artist likes it and benefits from it, then there's really no issue, in my opinion. But really, it was like, you know, every artist, if they have 100 people paying $100, you get $10,000 extra a show or something.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, no, you're right. Like, some people like that. And obviously, it would never work if the fans wouldn't want to be into it. You know, they're not willing to purchase that experience. So they must want it. And I think they do enjoy it. But to me, it always felt like it was something that the artist was being forced to do. Like, yeah, either they were like, hey, we need to sort of bolster our budget, so we're going to do this. Like you said, 100 people at $100. Look how much more money you can make, or this is going to, you know, line your pockets. And the artist never wants to be there. I mean, honestly, I can't think of an artist, even some of the more like bummer artists that I've met, still don't want to do that. You know, they don't want to get forced to meet their fans in that sort of environment. And then there's artists that really, really love and care about their fans, and they definitely don't want to meet their fans that way.
Cause it's like, kind of like you said, like assembly line-ist. Like, it's not very personal, and it's almost like clear what's happening to a way where it feels like not good. Okay.
Feels scammy.
Yeah.
You know, to me, and there might be some truth to the idea of thinking of, like, it seems like there's just like record label execs, like, in a conference room with, you know, smoke, just being like, well, let's just have them do meet and greets, and that's how we'll pay for the tour.
Yeah.
You know, there might be some truth to that, but that's just kind of what it feels like. And then they're forcing the artist to do something they don't want to do. And then the fans just really kind of almost getting taken advantage of.
And that's how it used to be. So it's kind of like, I don't want to go too fast, but it, for what it's worth, before we go into detail, it's moved away from that. Is that correct? Am I gathering that?
I think so.
Okay.
At least, you know, we're seeing, that definitely still exists. And like I said, like, it wouldn't exist because it wouldn't work if the fans didn't see value in it, and, you know, and because, or else it wouldn't sell. But now I think, you know, artists and are seeing a lot more opportunity to do cool stuff, and so there's definitely been sort of a big shift away from, let's take $100, give them a photo, you know, and let's actually do something that's cool.
It's like an experience now, right? Like, people are like, yeah, branding these things. They're going all out. The artist is like excited to show up because they're like, look at this thing I created.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's a lot of very cool stuff that's happening. Like, big activations, big experiences, and it's moved way beyond like the handshake, high five, whatever,
poster sign.
Yeah, actual like VIP experiences where people are actually being treated more like a VIP. You know, they're different entrance into the venue. They're able to skip lines. They're able to skip, you know, entrance lines and merch lines. They're getting exclusive stuff that nobody else is getting. And then they're still getting that photo op if they want.
That's just an aspect of it, though. It's not like the complete.
Right. That's not what you're paying, X amount of dollars to get just a photo. Now there's a whole lot more to it. It's a true experience.
And now, as you say it, like, okay, going into this podcast, I actually didn't realize this is what was a thing now. Because I'm a little bit inept to this part of the industry, and I didn't realize there was so much depth to it. And now I'm really excited. And as you were saying it, I was thinking back, I was like, okay, yeah, I remember touring in like 2010, 11, 12, and artists were like kind of on the cusp of getting really big. And they had these fans that really wanted to meet them, and they, you know, capitalized on that. It's fine. But it was like a lot of signing posters all day and then step and repeats. But then I do remember a specific tour with a day to remember. I want to say it was House Party or Parks and Devastation, where their VIP package was not it. There was a part where you took a photo. We did it at the end. I did it. It was a group photo for sake of time. But mostly it was these fans come in, and then they would do like some songs for them, acoustic. And then they would do like a Q&A, which was my favorite thing ever. And it was like 30 minutes, and the fans could just ask questions and they would answer them. And I was like, this is cool.
Yeah.
And that was like the first time I was like, oh, experience. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, artists like that, like the guys in the data room, they actually, it shows how much they value their fans. Cause they're like, you know what, let's just spend a little bit more of our day giving these fans, you know, our biggest fans, yeah, what, you know, more of an experience, something to take home, something they can do and that they'll remember, versus just having a photo, like a digital photo somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I was gonna say, photos were cooler when photos were harder to get.
Right.
Photos were cooler when like not everybody had access to them and bands were kind of hidden. Like, I think in like 2005, a step and repeat would have been sick. But now, yeah, it's like, all right, everybody's got photos of everybody. Bands are more accessible. Like, you gotta kind of do more.
Yeah, definitely. Bands are way more, artists and you know, are just way more accessible. Like, their lives are so much more like exposed through social media. And so, you know, part of the VIP program is like the part of the exclusivity is getting access, like exclusive access. And as like artists have become more accessible through social media, you know, how do you create a more exclusive like experience for those people? Well, I think it's through doing stuff that, you know, I think you've mentioned like Q&As and, you know, acoustic performances and stuff like that.
I feel like Panic of the Disco had like a museum or something on tour. Like people had like some crazy stuff on the road or like.
Yeah, that's been something that's been really cool that I think we're seeing a lot more of is people taking out, not just like carrying a step and repeat.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it's just a step and repeat now, it almost feels like it's kind of an afterthought for a lot of people, but they're putting a lot of time and energy and money into these crazy activations. I know you mentioned like Panic at the Disco. They do a thing, their House of Memories.
That's what it is? Okay.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, they're invested in it just as, you know, just so they can take these things out for their fans. It's, you know, it's almost a truck full of stuff. It requires time and energy and money to put out there and bring to fans. It's not like, you know, now it's feeling a lot more, you know, like mutual, like, hey, let's create this experience together. I'm not just taking money in from the fan.
Yeah, it's like you respect
them. Spending money to give the fans an experience too on top of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know for sure like Panic does that. You know, I how I kind of got into VIP was with Shawn Mendes. And that was the first time that I saw a really big sort of investment in the experience for the fans. It was
I just want to know, like, before you tell us what happened with Shawn Mendes and what the VIP experience was, like kind of how did this rise in popularity happen? And then like what, cause you see the back end of it. And if this is privileged information and we can't know, that's fine. Tell me to shut up. But I want to know why Shawn Mendes decided to go from whatever he was doing before to having this experience. Like what made the artist make that jump?
You know, I think there's probably a few factors, and it's probably, you know, my view of it is a little bit more simplified than the reality. You know, usually things are a lot more complex than they look. Yeah. But, you know, I worked with Shawn when before he was really big, you know, when he was a Vine star. I was working with him as I was his first tour manager back in 2014 or something.
Respect.
And at that point, yeah, dude, it was fun. It was crazy. It was a good time. You know, 15-year-old Shawn and me and his manager and his dad or his mom out on the road. It was a wild time.
That's a trip.
But yeah, it was such a cool experience. And to see him grow over the past few years has been insane and awesome. But, you know, I got to give a lot of credit to him and his manager, Andrew Gertler. You know, the first tour I did with Shawn, he was just doing the step and repeat thing. He was support for Austin Mahone. And, you know, that's all we could really, you know, we were sort of allowed to do. And it was just selling out and the kids were nuts. And I got to give a lot of credit to Shawn. Like he's always been super, super into giving his fans value. Always. He always was, you know, it was a priority for him to make sure that his fans never feel, you know, like an afterthought or anything like that. So even when he was just doing the step and repeat thing, you know, he was spending time with each kid, which was very cool. Cause you know, I'd worked with a lot of artists where, you know, it's just kind of rushed through just because, you know, whether it was, we just didn't have time or they just weren't really into it. Cause you know, it's a little awkward when all you get is a high five, move on. It started with that. But then by the time Shawn was headlining his own shows, even in the very beginning, one of their big priorities for him and Andrew was to bring an actual experience to his biggest fans, the ones that wanted to, you know, invest, you know, pay a little more to get some more access into Shawn and what he's doing. And so they, from the beginning, I thought it was wild when I first heard it. I was like, this is so crazy, but they wanted to put a museum out. Like they were the first ones that I saw. And I was like, dude, this Shawn's, you know, Shawn's playing theaters, you know, where are we putting a museum?
Yeah.
Where are we, you know, and I mean, it's expensive, you know, it's a big investment to put that together. It takes a lot of people and a lot of time beforehand. And then on the road, you know, build a museum and then tear it down before doors is crazy. And they, you know, that was 2016 or 17 is when he was doing that. And so he has been doing it for a long time. And it's just sort of evolved over the years into, you know, it definitely got a little bit more like tour worthy. You know, the first iteration of his museum was just sort of like a wild, like, we're going to actually bring this and that. And like, we're going to bring a real bed.
It's like
real
a yard sale
coming and stuff. But yeah. And it was like, there's no way we're getting this thing into road cases tonight. But, you know, it evolved. And as it evolved and he was able to spend more time and more money on it as he grew as an artist, you know, it got better and better. And I still doing it.
So he has a museum that goes out with him today still. It's kind of like more like museum's a weird word for it. I know what it means, but museum, I think of like archaic items. It's really just like, hey, here's all these things that I guess museum's a good word for it. It's all these things that are important in his career put on display. Yeah.
Yeah. Or I mean, maybe like a gallery.
Yeah. Gallery. You know, but it is like historical in regards to their career.
Yeah. In the context of Sean, you know, starting at the age of 14 or even before that, mm-hmm. you know, his history of him being a performer is there. You know, his very first guitar from his very first Vine that went viral. We had it on the road.
Nobody stole it.
No, I mean, no. And what was crazy is when we did it, you know, 2019, we had a really cool activation out. It was a big, you know, 40-foot hallway museum, and the guitars were just out in the open and people could touch them. And I was like, this is pretty crazy, ballsy, dude. Like, yeah, you're really someone's just gonna pluck that thing off the wall.
Put an AirTag on it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 2019, AirTags weren't a thing yet when we were doing that, but it was cool. And he has such a great fan base that I think that people were just excited for the opportunity to see that stuff and to be able to like touch it if they wanted. But yeah, I mean, he does that. I mean, and a lot of the artists that I've been able to work with in regards to VIP, pretty cool. They put like the real deal stuff out there, you know, through the company I work with, 237 Global Inc. You know, we work with a lot of clients. Like I think about like we worked with Alanis Morissette over the last year.
Oh, cool.
And like Steve. We got to work. She's got a guy named EJ that works for her. He's an archivist and he is incredible. I mean, and he's got this insane history. All of her stuff's like archived, and he was able to send us out on the road with like, you know, the real deal, like these awards and these real pieces, like these wardrobe pieces from various videos and stuff. And it's very cool when
very
artists
museum.
Want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very cool when artists want to do that because it's the real thing, you know, and fans can actually, you know, I always feel like fans can kind of see through BS, you know? And so if you're putting something out there, that's like a replica or just kind of like half-assed, it kind of shows.
I feel like artists like want to be excited about everything they do too. And to have like VIP be a fun, exciting thing that they like, rather than like what we talked about at the beginning, makes so much sense. Cause now you can like confidently be like, every part of the VIP experience is like something I support and put my time into, which is cool.
Yeah. I think, you know, you were talking about sort of the evolution of, you know, going from the step and repeat photo op to these experiences and beyond these experiences, where it's not just you get to access this museum, but there's also maybe a Q&A like you mentioned, or like a acoustic performance, or maybe it's just like, you know, super exclusive merch, but all this stuff. But I think what happened is, you know, the step and repeat thing got pretty played out. And I think artists that really care about their fans wanted to be able to give them more if fans were willing to pay for it. And obviously if there's more money, there's more resources, then you can start building stuff. You can invest instead of just lining your pockets a little more, build a museum. Yeah. Or, you know, pay for the extra staff at the venue to come in an hour early, process those tickets so those VIPs don't have to wait in those lines. They're the first ones in their seats or the first ones at the front of the pit.
And that's sick.
Yeah.
It's a good experience.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's cool. And I think, you know, the fans definitely appreciate it. And I think fans, the true fans really notice that, you know, these artists aren't just lining their pockets more. They're reinvesting those resources into the experience.
Yeah, that feels so much better. It feels like, and I'm happy I just didn't know that because, well, I don't know why I would know that. I haven't been on the receiving end of it and I don't work in it. I know that's what you do, but I admit prior to this, I thought maybe I was like, how does he do the whole job with the VIP? Like, I want to know about it, but I didn't realize it wasn't step and repeats. And that's kind of embarrassing, but that's so much better.
Yeah, it is. And it's such a weird small corner of the industry, which, you know, a lot of people don't really see the ins and outs of the industry. And then to find that little niche corner where there's like, you know, normally just like a very small portion of people that get this exclusive access, you know, it's not, and it's, you know, a lot of people that deal like that are on tour like yourself are pretty busy all day and don't really have the time to go find the VIP experience and experience it for yourself.
Yes, definitely at catering, probably. No, I'm just kidding. Working hard. Tour is a lot of work. Well, I mean, now it feels like, correct me if I'm wrong, but do most artists on headlining tours have VIP these days? And second part of that question, do people that aren't headlining have VIP these days, or is it mostly just headliners?
So I would say, you know, my angle on it is going to be pretty, pretty skewed because I do VIP. So, you know, most people I'm working with are doing VIP, but well,
you got the pulse yeah, on the industry though.
I think most artists are doing it because of a couple of things. Obviously, you know, they want to be able to give their fans more, especially if they're willing to pay for it. And then, you know, they're doing it because of the added resources it brings to the tour, the extra income. So I think most artists are doing some sort of VIP, and not always does it include artist interaction, especially coming out of COVID, because we still don't know exactly what's going on. And some, you know, obviously if the artist gets COVID, then the tour has to take a break. So, you know, a lot of what we saw post pandemic was VIP experiences that didn't necessarily include direct interaction, but it was still a very cool experience. I think that was probably a factor in what we're seeing now too, is people trying to figure out, how can I give these my fans like a better experience without risking, you know, the tour happening and the shows going on.
That makes sense. And is there, I know you said revenue and, you know, giving fans something, is there an aspect to this, like the fans that attend this? I know in like the tech world, they call it stickiness. I don't know what it would be called in VIP, but is there like a fan retention increase? Like, hey, if 100 people come to this VIP at this show, then those 100 people are more likely to come to every single show and maybe even more VIPs in the future. If it's a good, like, is there an aspect that's like, these fans are becoming even bigger fans, I guess you would say.
I think so. You know, and yeah, beyond that, now with social media, you know, one of the things is, you know, people get these experiences and they post about it. And if it's a positive experience, it spreads, you know, and next time we go out or the artist is going out, there's the opportunity to, you know, maybe add more numbers to it, you know,
yeah,
give more people an experience.
More demand.
Yeah. And then obviously if people come out and they have a bad experience, I know fans are usually hesitant to, or some fans are hesitant to post negative things about the artists they like, but some of them definitely aren't. And it gets out there, you know, it's pretty transparent these days.
Has there been any fire fests of VIP world where people like showed up and they were like promised like a movie theater museum and they showed up and it was like a projector and like a thing in a box or something? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I haven't seen any of it personally, but
not
I'm
at
sure
your company.
That stuff happened. No, definitely not. I mean, I've seen activations, you know, some lounges that are pretty rough, but nothing that I've personally.
They get an A for effort.
And maybe like an F for effort and like an A for
attempt. Literally attempt.
Yeah. somebody along the way.
The intentions were there.
It was a good idea. Yeah, at some point, but it dwindled. But yeah, I think for the most part, you know, because it gets your biggest fans are posting about it, you obviously want to make it amazing. So it's getting enough attention.
PR.
And the other cool part about it now too, is because this is growing from just this step and repeat sort of afterthought bummer for the artist to these cool things that maybe the artist doesn't even have to be involved in directly, but they have a very heavy hand in putting together in advance, like building this museum and putting this launch together, what pieces of themselves are being directly shown to these top fans. You know, I think that's why they're getting bigger and bigger and better because of social media.
That's the bar's getting driven up. The bar is being raised as people are seeing that makes sense. I just hope that the bar isn't being raised so much that somebody's going to listen to this podcast, show up to a VIP and be like, yo, Usher, step and repeat. That's it. Dude, you know what Panic's doing? Like, this is, I heard a podcast.
Yeah.
This, you're just taking my money. Like, it's like, oh, don't tell them we said anything, guys.
This yeah.
Oh man, that'd be so funny.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The step and repeat still happens and it's still a good experience.
Yeah, it has its place.
It does have its place. And a lot of times there's a lot more factors. Like, you know, if it's time and if there's no time, I mean, that's what you get. That's all, the artists can do what they can do. So I don't want to poo-poo on those, but there's better.
Yeah. And let's be honest, like sometimes a photo with an artist, depending on the artist, is like pretty crazy. Like I remember going to a VIP when I was a kid and it was Gwar. I'm like, yeah, put me in a step and repeat with Gwar because it's Gwar and they look ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like back to what you were saying earlier about the photo not maybe meaning as much as it used to. I think it's kind of like a signature.
Yeah.
You know, like I think the younger generations don't see as much value in a signature as they used to.
Yes.
Maybe some people do. Maybe I'm just getting old.
It's okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. You got your own biases. We're good though. All right. So we know what VIP is. We know how kind of it works. We don't know how it works. I want to know how it works. I want to know what it looks like. Like, I want to know what your role is in it. And then I want to talk about what it looks like to go on tour and work for your company or a company that does VIP in general. Because I think, and I know there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are like trying to punch their way into this industry. And I feel like VIP is a really good entry point because it's just a good entry point. You get to learn everything.
100%. It is a great way to get a foot in the door in the industry. It's super accessible too. But where do you want to start? You want to know?
Yeah, what's your job? What do you do at VIP? Because you don't tour. We go to shows sometimes to check on them, but what do you do?
So I work in the live department at 237 Global Inc. And we deal,
Whenever you say the name, it's so funny to me. I'm sorry. Because it sounds like it's from like Office. It's just like 237 Global Inc. There's like, I don't know how to explain it. No offense to your boss.
237 Global.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Inc. Part though.
Sometimes I just go 237G. Sounds kind of cool.
That's cool.
But what I do at 237G is I work in the live department. And I work with a bunch of what we call program managers who work with artists and their teams hand in hand from basically the concept, you know, conceptualizing a VIP program all the way through execution and then wrapping up the finances. So it's the whole gamut of what that includes. And so that's, you know, I get to be pretty involved with a bunch of different clients and seeing what they're doing and you know, the whole spectrum, everything from like what we're talking about, like, we're, you know, VIP experiences that are sort of a photo and then everything to what we were discussing with, you know, what Sean Mendez and Panic the Disco are doing, where it's just full blown a truck on the road, big activation. Yeah.
So you talk to like artists, managers, like who are you working with to kind of conceptualize this? And then like, do you do it all in-house or do you have people that create it or how does it work?
Yeah. So, you know, we start with the artist team. Sometimes it's directly with the artist. Sometimes it's with management. Sometimes it's, you know, through agents or day-to-day managers. But usually artists have a pretty heavy hand in what we're doing, which is very cool.
That is cool.
And I think it really shows. Yeah. And so we'll work with them a few months to a couple of years, sometimes out from a tour and start to develop a program. We, you know, one of the things I think that we're able to do, because we have such a good team that can pull this stuff off, is we can go to the artists. We say, hey, what do you want to do? Yeah. Not what can we get you to do? You know, obviously you don't want to stand there and meet people for 10 seconds at a time. That's super awkward. What do you want to do with these fans? Do you want to meet them? Do you want to talk to them? You know, do you want to, you know, and so we get into that and we can create something that's super valuable for the fan and fun for the artist and create these programs, these multiple tiered programs. And then once we figure out what we're doing, we get to put it all together and work with different ticketing platforms and venues to get it up on sale and work to promote it. And obviously, a lot of these things sell out pretty clean from the beginning. And then once everything's on sale, we start to work on how it's gonna happen on site. So if the program includes, you know, a lot of them include like some pretty cool exclusive merch. We have in-house designers, or we work with the artist team or the artist merch company to get that stuff going, you know, making sure that we're ordering the right amount of stuff. And it's a really cool package. I know we got to work with Lionel Richie doing a,
Oh, that's fire. That's cool.
Yeah, that was cool. He's doing a couple residencies right now. And we're like, oh, it's Vegas residency. Well, what do people that go to Vegas want? You know, so we got to put this like
everything.
We ended up with like a cocktail set. That's like his like super cool Vegas residency branding on it and stuff.
That is cool.
Yeah. And you know, it's really awesome because where else are you going to get that? Yeah. Only if you get Lionel Richie VIP. So, you know, we do that. And then, you know, obviously with like House of Memories, we work with production teams to come up with these like crazy complex builds that happen on the road.
So, I mean, yeah, it has to pack up. It has to go on the trailer and then come off the trailer in a way where local crew can navigate it without, you know, with just in a way that they would set up a stage.
Exactly. And that's been one of the trickiest parts for me going from being a tour manager / production guy into shifting into VIP is we're doing stuff in VIP that isn't common. You know what I mean? Like if we're coming
pushing
into
the boundaries.
If you're coming into a venue, even if you're doing groundbreaking stuff or stuff that's not very, you know, not a lot of people are doing like special effects and stuff, you can still have a relatively easy time explaining how it's going to get set up in the advanced process. You know, it's going to go on the stage. You know, that's pretty much it, or where the stage is. As opposed to VIP, you go, hey, we're coming in with this.
It's going to go in your cafeteria.
We need a museum and then we need a lounge space and place for a Q&A that has to be accessible to 300 people throughout the night, but also needs a VIP entrance and a relatively, you know, and close to restrooms. And it's just like these venues. Yeah. And these venues are like, okay. And it opens up all these options and But yeah, back to what you were saying, like to build these builds, these activations, like, you know, an artist will come to us and say, hey, like Sean Mendes said, hey, I want to build like really cool Bedouin sort of tent vibe lounge. And we're like, yeah, that's awesome. But to move that everywhere? And he's like, yeah, I want to put like this cool tent ceiling on it. And like, okay. And so we have some really cool production partners that we have to work with. And, you know, and there's a lot of, when you're doing stuff like that, you have to take into account like local fire codes and stuff and what can get done. And then getting that stuff from the loading dock to wherever this is happening in the venue, all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of complex work that goes into that. Then we get into the actual execution where we're communicating with the fans, you know, the purchasers. Yeah. We reach out to them. We're sending them information, telling them where to be and when.
Different for every venue, I'm sure.
Yes, different for every venue. And even different, you know, like I said, like it can be, you know, sometimes they walk in the venue and it's right there. And then other times it's, you have to tell them how to get to the something lounge or medallion club or whatever. So a lot of work goes into that fan communication or purchaser communication, making sure that they have access to the information they need going into it. And then the execution happens on site. And that's a whole thing in itself, you know, and that's, we can get into that too.
Yeah. And that's like kind of the part that might be pretty interesting. I mean, all this was interesting to me because you can't really just talk about part of it without understanding the whole picture. But the people, the activation aspect of it, the people who are actually on the road touring, that's the part that I feel like, and I think you agree, would be a good, you know, entry point into the industry. So like, I guess we could start with, how do you find people to go on the road for this? Like, who are you hiring?
Right now, kind of anybody and everybody. Like VIP is booming. Fans coming out of the pandemic are hungry for fan interaction, you know, artist interaction or VIP experiences. And everybody's on the road right now. So I'm sure you've heard, I mean, most people know that it's hard to find good people. Like you said, VIP is a great entry point for someone who maybe doesn't have any experience at all touring or might have experience touring or just going to gigs, you know, that's kind of all you need. And one of the things we do quite often, because these VIP experiences are growing and growing and they just require multiple bodies to be at different places at different times or, you know, help setting up, is we work with and rely on like a huge network of local assistants, local helpers. And that is the best entry point because we meet these wonderful people who sometimes it's just something they're doing as like, you know, a second gig to their job. Sometimes they're doing it because that's what they really enjoy, just being at live events. And sometimes they're doing it because they want to get into touring. But we have been fortunate enough to, as a company, to pick up some amazing local assistants that we work with consistently. And when we go, hey, we have a tour going on and we can't find anybody, let's grab so-and-so, this amazing local assistant. And though they might not have any experience touring, we're able to take them because they have had experience running these VIP programs and put them on the road. And then it's just, you know, learning a little bit of the etiquette.
Don't shit on the bus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just learning a little bit of that exact kind of etiquette that they can do. They can do that. The one thing about VIP too that's a little different is there's not necessarily as much direct like oversight on the road. You know, a lot of what we're able to communicate with our people that we have on the road from the office and sort of walk them through different scenarios. And everything we do is so varied show to show that we're already so hand in hand on this stuff that it's a good opportunity for people who might not have any experience to get on the road and sort of be, maybe that's not the best word, but like have their hand held through their first tour.
Yeah. It's like enough problem solving to where you're learning, but at the same time, it's not too much to where you're like, I'm going to cry and go home tomorrow. So it's like a good balance. Right. And yeah, that makes sense. It's like responsibility, but not all of it.
Yeah. And it's a good way to get your feet wet with touring without, you know, obviously if you're jumping in and doing something on the stage, and that can be pretty critical too.
Heavier repercussions.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't,
can't really
put someone who might have experience setting up guitars, but doesn't have touring experience or worked in that sort of environment. You know, you can't just pick someone up off the road that you like, or off, you know, the side of the road that you like to do that, as opposed to VIP, you can kind of do that.
Yeah. And then once people work in VIP and they do understand it, in theory, they could upstream or whatever a good term is to something more specific.
Dude, that happens all the time. People do VIP for a few tours, and then obviously doing VIP, one of the things that we I always push when I'm doing a VIP program or putting people out on the road is not, let's not do just VIP for the fans. Let's VIP the whole tour. Let's make everybody feel like a VIP that's working. When you pass people backstage, say what's up, introduce yourself, be that like the light in their dark days or whatever. And in doing that, you meet everybody. Huh? And we lose a bunch of really good VIP people because the tours go, hey, do you want to do production work? And then gone. You know, they're done with VIP, or they'll do VIP.
Sign a non-compete. Again,
but yeah. So it is a really good way for people to get into touring industry, especially if they don't have any other sort of in.
Is there like an email I can pass around, or is this like a place people can like submit for openly, or is it you got to know somebody or have suggestions? Or
yeah, I mean, you can always reach out to 237 Global.
Yeah, give me an email.
Info at 237 Global.
I'll put it in the caption.
You can reach out and just reach out to us. Let us know kind of what market you're in, where you live. And if you're interested in becoming sort of one of our local assistants, send us an email.
I was going to say, and tell them you listen to 90 episodes of Don't Shit on the Bus. So you know how to not punish people while you're working. And they'll be like, all right, cool. Hire that.
Yeah, please. Yeah. Honestly, that would be it would probably help. reference Adam in the podcast, because then I'll know it's coming from a good place and we won't have to worry about vetting you as much. But there's that. There's also Facebook groups, and then, you know, just finding people on social media who do this. You know, everyone's super friendly. You kind of have to be super friendly to work in VIP.
Can you imagine being an angry VIP host? It'd be like the worst thing ever. You show up for like this thing you paid money for. They're like, what do you need? What do you want?
Yeah. I don't have time to listen to that. You're like,
maybe
that's
not the
a good,
job for
that's
you.
Not a good experience.
Let's put you on backline. Okay. Well,
that fits.
We've got like a few more minutes. I kind of want to tell people, like, I think people can figure out what a local hand will do. They'll help with like the daily things that the person who's on tour will tell them to do. But can you walk me through in maybe like a 5-minute time frame what somebody on the road working for your company would do in a day? Because we've never talked about it on this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I can just kind of rough outline it, because like
I
mentioned, every artist's vision for what they do, every artist is so different. And so the VIP programs are so different. But for the most part, when you have a rep out on the road running VIP, it's usually a pretty complex program with multiple tiers. And when an artist is investing in having someone on the road, they want it done right. So it's usually something that's a little more complex. But so generally for those, one of the first things that a VIP rep or team would do in the morning on a show day, you wake up, get off the bus, brush your teeth, and then you meet up with the venue staff and you're going to walk through the VIP program. We do a venue walkthrough. It's usually the first thing in the morning. So you're going to, you know, see where the VIPs are entering the building, where you're going to be doing your photo shoot or whatever Q&A, sort of the route, that kind of stuff. Is that it's that venue walkthrough. And then you're going to start setting up based off of, you know, confirming where everything's going to happen. I would say, you know, for the most, I don't know how it's kind of become this way, but 10 a.m. has sort of become the standard for a walkthrough for some reason.
That's just when it just happened organically.
Yeah. It's just the thing now. Definitely not all the time, but most of the time. So 10 a.m. you do that walkthrough, and then by 11, you're starting to set up. And you usually have from about 11 to 2 to get set up with your building anything or, you know, moving all your cases. Sometimes as a VIP person, you're very on your own.
Yeah.
On the road, because you're usually set up, you know, the rest of the touring team is going to be working primarily backstage on stage.
Oh yeah. And you're in like the venue running around.
Yeah. You're out in the front. You could be in the front, like mezzanine, or sometimes you're actually in like a sister venue down the street. So you're kind of on your own. So moving your cases and getting set up can be, even if it's a fairly simple setup, it can take a few hours. And then 2-3 o'clock, you're starting to shift into check-in. So, you know, you're going to have a list of names and packages, and it can get a little complex depending on how many packages. I think on, you know, with Sean, we had like 6 packages, and sometimes they're ticketed, sometimes they're ticketless upgrades. And sometimes it's just 1 or 2 packages and then different merch. So you want to, around 2-3 in the afternoon, you're starting to wrap your head around that. You've got your lists, your names of purchasers, and you're starting to put together your merch for those things. So that when you're checking people in, you can just hand off that merch.
So it's a smooth process.
Yeah, because definitely the busiest part of your day as a VIP rep on the road is going to be sort of that couple hours before doors where you are doing the VIP program and probably checking in 50 to hundreds of people at a time. And that's where that's when we're doing hundreds of people. And that's really where we rely on those local.
Let's say that sounds wild.
Yeah. So you definitely, that's why we need those local assistants. We're checking in crazy numbers, which is always super cool. And then you always, you know, inevitably there's a discrepancy in a name or a package or a transfer of a package or whatever. And you want to, these are VIPs. So you want to give them all that attention. You want to be patient with them. You want to get it sorted. The last thing you want is someone thinking they have VIP that purchased it and it's not working out and they're crying and you're like, this isn't how it's supposed to go. You know, don't worry, we're going to fix this. So that's why you need those local assistants or a bigger team so that you can continue checking in those people, stay on track while you're able to sort of focus on.
Can keep it going all the time.
Yeah. There's so much going on. And then VIP programs usually happen an hour before doors. That's, you know, when artists have wrapped sound check, but they're not quite in show mode yet. So, you know, that's when we're doing our Q&As or our photo ops and stuff like that. And then usually after doors, that's when things start to wrap up and you break it down.
So you have an earlier day than other people, huh? You're like done before everybody else.
Yeah, usually. Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, other touring staff will see the VIP person at 10 a.m. and then they'll see him again at like 8. And they're like, and what they don't realize is that VIP person has worked nonstop.
Yeah.
A lot of times you miss lunch and dinner because it's nonstop, as opposed to like stage guys, you know, they're up at 9 and load in and then they take, you know, a couple hours break and then they do sound check and they get a couple hours break to the show and then they're done. So they're
almost staggered. Yeah.
But they get in breaks where the VIP person might have a shorter day, but it's nonstop. There is no meals. You know what I mean?
Just Soylent all day. Yeah. Just liquid food.
I remember those Soylent days.
Is there like a lot of computer work when you're, because I think the cool part about VIP is it kind of trains you in all these different areas that you can take into other parts of touring. So you kind of get like the setup, the breakdown, you got to work with the venue, and working with the venue is good for, you know, a production manager, tour manager, merch person. Setup, teardown is good for merch and stage. And then you have computer work, which is applicable to a lot of the admin jobs like production manager or production coordinator, tour director. Do you have a lot of emailing and communication while you're on the road?
That's where it varies again. But that's where our office team comes into play. The 237 global team that's there just fully supporting, you know, they'll do a lot of the advance work, a lot of the emails to allow the reps to, you know, our VIP teams on the road to really focus on, you know, problem solving and getting that done. But we do also have a lot of reps that will take on a lot of the advance work because they're the ones on site. They're the ones that have to deal with the venue on site. So if they can do that advance work, they can have those email conversations and phone conversations about where they're going to be set up, where the entry is, blah, blah, blah. If they can do it, if they have the capacity to do it in that time, you know, if their day wraps at 8 and then they can jump on emails for a couple of hours, they have that energy. Yeah. And there's definitely that opportunity there.
Cool. VIP is cool. VIP is way more, it's like when you said you were doing this, I was like, I got to learn about this because I know you're not going to do something that's not challenging. And I knew it couldn't be what I thought it was. So I'm happy. Like, even if everybody hates this episode for some unbeknownst reason to me, I love it because I get to learn so much. So thank you for teaching me all these things.
It's crazy because when I got into VIP, when Sean Mendez's team called me and they said, hey, we want you to do VIP. And I was like, VIP? I don't do that.
I need a job.
I'm a tour manager.
Not a task.
Yeah. And I was like, and then, you know, I love Sean and Sean's team is great. So I was like, I'll do it. And I was like, this is going to be a cakewalk. VIP is easy. And I got into it and it is not. Yeah. It is a task, you know, it's a great gig and it's actually super rewarding when it's done right. And the fan gets there, it could be the best day of their lives. They're getting to meet the person that they really care about or the artist that they interact, or even if there's no artist interaction, they're seeing stuff that they never thought they'd get to see or anybody else gets to see. So it's actually super cool. It's super rewarding. It's actually very hard, very complex. It's not a cakewalk like I thought it was going to be. But it's been very cool. Yeah. And I hope I didn't make it sound too boring by getting too much into it. Okay. Well, we'll see.
We had a good level of depth, like where it was like, okay, you didn't just say you load in and then you do the thing. You know, we explained it, but you also weren't like, this is the number breakdown. You know, it was like you're at the middle ground. They're like, this is mostly true, but not always true.
Kind of. Yeah. And you know, I would encourage people, if they're in like interested in VIP work, it is like a really good way to get into touring. It's tough and it requires people who are passionate about what they do. Like they want it. They care about what they do. They want to do it right. And also a lot of patience, because fans can be crazy on the best day of their lives. People are a little bit flustered sometimes.
I'm crazy.
So, but yeah, like, you know, people can hit the info at 237 Global email. If they're curious, reference the podcast. So, we know that you're coming from a good source.
Just send an email with just the logo. That's the whole email. You're just saying, I came from here. You'd be like, yeah, oh, okay, and cool.
And honestly, like, you know, ask for Matt if you'd want to, and you know, I'll try and reach out and get you connected to the right, get your foot in the door.
Hell yeah! Well, thank you for coming on here, man, and sharing all your knowledge. And I do have a question that I ask everybody. I got to know, when you toured, shower shoes or no shower shoes? Like, what's your vibe?
Oh man. I mean, shower shoes as much as you can, for sure. But sometimes you leave them and you're like, uh-oh, I'm just going in. Like, I'm not walking back to the bus.
Yeah.
So mostly shower shoes, but there are definitely times when it's raw.
Well, hell yeah. All right, man. I like to hear it. I like the middle ground. I'm a heavy, maybe not intentionally, but I just never did it. And then a lot of people come on, they're like, how do you have to do it?
And then, yeah.
Andrew Weiss was pretty funny. He was like, oh, I just wear flip-flops all the time, so I'm just ready.
There you go.
Like, whenever. And I was like, oh, okay. He's just always wearing his shower shoes.
You always wore those, like, do you still wear those shoes? Yeah.
I don't wear those anymore. I did wear the Vibram Five Fingers for a long time, and I don't remember if I showered in them or not. I think I did, because that's how I washed them.
I mean, on Warped Tour, they never came outside, off. So yeah. I mean, you don't really shower anyways, but when you do, it's like a hose outside, so.
Yeah. I don't know why Yeah, I think Justin was on last week, and I think he said, I'm a no shower kind of guy. I was like, all right. All right,
yeah,
Justin.
Some people do that, especially some people just wait for that hotel room, so they can do that. I mean, that's not me.
All right, Matt. Thank you so much.
All right, guy.
I look forward to seeing you in real life sometime soon, and have a good rest of your vacation.
Dude, thank you so much, Adam. I had a lot of fun.
Hey, Victor, how's it going, man?
I'm doing great. How are you, man?
Good. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Of course. Thanks for taking the leap of faith and trusting me on this first trial run.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm always down to try new things. And hey, we're rolling with it.
Hey, we're doing it, man. You're really doing it. Are you in a van that you travel in right now?
I am. I am in the driver's seat right now of our van, our Ford Toyota Sienna that we drove around the whole country, and we finally made it back to California.
Welcome back to California. And I have not done an intro for this section, so I'm going to do it while you're here. This is like, we're trying, you know. Victor hit me up and was like, hey, I'm on this tour, partly the fault of the podcast. Right. That's not wrong. Like, yeah. I played a role. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Cool. I don't want to like toot my own horn if it was incorrect, but he's on tour, and I figure as people get on tour, we got to celebrate that. I'm interested in things. We've got Victor here to share his experience. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And it's great to be here too. It's an absolute pleasure.
Hell yeah. All right. Who are you on tour with, and how'd you get on tour? I got to know. You got to fill me in on I want to know the juicy details.
Yeah. So I'm on tour with Standards right now, math rock band from Los Angeles/Long Beach. And we are on the Fruit Town tour, which is the new album that just came out on July 22nd. And yeah, we've done, I mean, basically all of the US, California. Actually, we started in San Diego. First day.
Ooh, wow. Where'd you play there?
Soda Bar.
Oh, nice. Good venue. Really good venue.
Yeah. So that was a great, great place to start, because I had played there with my band at one point. So,
oh, sick.
Started there. And then the next day was San Francisco for the record release show. And then we went down to Vegas. A lot of driving at the very front of it. And so they went all the way through all the southern states to Florida. Up
you
to,
went. You
went.
Not they. You did.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we went to over to New York, Connecticut, and then up to Canada. And then now we're heading back through the, you know, heading west to the left coast.
How long were you out on the road for?
Today is exactly a month.
Wow. Good job. And I'm going to apologize to our viewers if they're watching this on video. I forgot to pin your video. So for the first part of this video, you're going to be a thumbnail, and now you're going to be the right size. So sorry, oh, gotcha. Connor, and sorry, viewers. No disrespect, man. I just forgot. That's cool. A whole month. Are you dirty?
I am not too dirty, surprisingly.
Are you guys getting hotels, or are you like pretty much roughing it? Like, what's the vibe? I mean,
it's been a mix. We've had the hotels, but we've also roughed it in many interesting ways. But I'll start off with like the hotels. Like Marcos, the guitar player, it's a 2-piece band, so guitar and drums.
Oh, so just three of you?
Yeah. Oh, there's four of us total. So I'm doing photo, video. We have drummer, guitar, and then we have merch.
Oh, nice.
So our buddy
the
Diego.
Crucial.
Yeah, for sure. So Marcos has been getting us hotels if we haven't found a place, you know, or a homie's place to crash at.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, I mean, it's been pretty good. Like we luckily have enough air mattresses to, you know, sleep on the floor if we need. And I think the first week I slept in probably four recliners.
Nice. That's good. Recliners are a good safe place to sleep because you're kind of off the ground and yeah, it's nice.
It's easy. Doesn't take up space. Don't leave a footprint. So I try to give priority to the musicians, you know, to give them the bed and the sofa.
The star treatment.
I'll do whatever I need to, you know, I'll figure it out. But musicians first.
Yeah, that's cool. I respect that. How did you get this tour? I want to know, because I feel like that's the challenging part for a lot of people. It's like, all right, I want a tour. I'm not on tour. I want to get on tour. You did the thing. So how'd you do it?
It was through a friend who he was in my first photography class 10 years ago. So I was living in Morgantown, West Virginia. His band was coming through Pittsburgh originally, but then I couldn't make that show. So I was like, hey, if I can't make this one show, could I join you guys for like two dates beforehand? And that was North Carolina to Baltimore. During that time, you know, I shot my friend, they're called Mundo from, LA, San Diego area as well, you know, kind of SoCal. And so my buddy Steen, who plays bass in Mundo, he gave my stuff to Marcos, and it had turned out that I actually know standards through a bunch of my old friends, because like my bandmates were standards fans, and like
you're in the social circle basically, like these are your peers almost. That's cool.
Yeah. And then like my band had recorded at like the one of the previous members' house a couple of years ago, and so I'm like, oh okay, you know all these people, that's pretty crazy. So it was a good fit. It was really a lot of, you know, networking in my own area when I could. So I was shooting a lot of shows in Pittsburgh when I was living in West Virginia. That really got me into the scene of the Morgantown, West Virginia, up to Pittsburgh scene. And, you know, a lot of people were starting to ask me for, you know, shots, and they eventually started paying me. So that really kind of paid for my tickets, you know, when I could. And then I met some friends through that show in North Carolina. You know, they were coming through Pittsburgh for another show or another tour. It was Nova Charisma. So then I got into that. And so now I'm really starting to get more into that whole scene of things, and, you know, friends of friends, they, you know, someone knows someone somewhere.
So you kind of just keep meeting people and connecting with people and not shitting on people's buses, and you're doing the thing.
Yeah, definitely.
While you're doing this tour, did stuff like appear that you had learned on the podcast at all? Like, I want to know if like anything happened where you're like, oh, I know what to do. Like, give me like a good story. I don't know. I want to hear something.
Yeah. I would say like one of the things that I've noticed a lot, because Marcos, he's a very admired guitar player in the math rock scene.
Oh, cool.
So you get a lot of people asking him a lot of the same questions, you know, and that's, it's, you get the Punisher sometimes, and they, you know, we've had enough talks where I'm like, all right, I get that. You know, I've heard that, but now I'm really starting to get that, you know, firsthand experience of it. Yeah. Like, okay, I see what that means now. And then it's just like other, really being aware of my surroundings all the time, knowing that I'm clocked in from when I wake up to when I go to sleep.
Yeah.
And really trying to, you know, conduct myself in professional ways as often as I possibly can to, you know, not make a fool of myself.
That's a good place to be. I think that's great, especially like, and like we can both admit you're on like a relatively, you know, it's a pretty like DIY tour, but I like, you know, and some people might let loose on that, but I like that you're still treating it in a way where you're like, all right, you know, your goal is you want to do this long-term. So the impressions you make on these people and as they grow are important. You don't want to be like drunk and, you know, or maybe you do, but like in theory, you don't want to be like drunk and reckless or something, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, and like, it's a,
it's very easy to get that. You know, now I see exactly how easy it is because everyone wants to party with you, but maybe you just want to go to sleep.
Yes, agreed. Hey, man, I know how exhausting it can. Well, I mean, yeah, thank you. I mean, thanks for coming on and just talking for a little bit. Is there anything else you want to say? I guess the question is, have you been wearing shower shoes? You're showering at hotels, huh?
Yeah, it hasn't been too bad, but I did have my first venue shower in Atlanta.
And
wear shower shoes.
I did not
wear shower shoes.
And you're still with us.
Clean. Okay. Yeah, I ran the hot water first.
Nice. You cleaned it. You pre-soaked it.
Yeah, I didn't know how to wash myself to, combat that. So I'm not too worried about it so far.
Me neither, man. I support the no shower shoes.
Yeah. So right now I'm team no shower shoes.
Let's go. All right. Well, Victor, thanks for coming on here. I appreciate it. I don't think I'll be able to come out your show in LA, unfortunately, but I wish I could. Have a really good time here, man.
Yeah. Thanks, man. And I'm going to be definitely touring back. I actually just potentially landed another tour today in January, and that'll
Let's
be
go
California.
It.
So I definitely love to meet up with you sometime and we can, catch up and share some stories. Love to.
Yeah. Drink some coffee. We'll do that.
Of course.
And, I have a rule about tours when I get them. I never say who it is or that I'm on it. Not like, it's fine what you said. I would do that, but I would never be like, I'm going out with this band on this date until I'm on the flight there and like get there. Cause I feel like they always fall through when I'm like, I'm going on a tour with this artist. And then they're like, we canceled. And I'm like, mother.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Not until it's, you take the first step on that, towards it.
Yeah. For sure. All right. Well, congrats on Daisy chaining them together and keep crushing it, man.
Thanks, man.